Season 3, episode 22, He's Not Guilty, He's My Brother. It's the last episode of season 3. It opens up with Sipowicz in a church talking to the deacon of Sylvia's parish, which is Greek Orthodox.
Yes.
If you remember last episode, he is now sober, or attempting to remain sober, and he went to see the priest because they're going to church. His son's going to have a churchening. Theo's going to have a churchening.
Which, christening.
Is it christening? Or because I thought he said churchening and I wasn't 100% sure.
No, it's a christening. Churchening is not a thing.
That's what I thought, but I could have swore. I watched this episode.
You should fucking know that.
Out
of anyone in this conversation, you should know that.
I understand. I understand what you're saying, but also I'm pretty sure he said today at his churchening, and I was like, that's not a thing. It's really weird because he basically just has a conversation with Sipowicz about trying to rely on God because of his dead son and his living son. That's kind of all it was.
It's really weird.
And that's all it is him going, I think about you and I want you to use this as a chance to pray, and then the opening ends. Anyway, this is NYPD Blue Balls, where Kirk, and Kyle...
And the churchening.
I swear to you, it's what he said. If we watch the episode right now, he said churchening.
Okay.
It is very strange. Anyway, this is NYPD Blue Balls. I'm Kirk. The guy sniffling is Kyle. And this is the theme song to NYPD Blue.
Damn, we have a little blast with the sniffles.
When we come back from the theme song, Sipowicz, Simone, and Russell go to a garage where it looks like there was a robbery homicide. It's clear.
Is it a garage? I thought it was something else, but you're right. Sorry.
Yeah, it was like a mechanic or something. Because there's a moment where Sipowicz with Russell says, I bet they've never had a car that their paint job only costs that much.
Oh, yeah.
And then they make the joke about, oh, maybe it was just a consumer advocate type. And then there's mention that he ducked out of a meeting because she was there. They have kind of a heart-to-heart about getting sober. And then she kisses his shoulder, which I thought was very strange.
Who, Russell?
Yeah, Russell straight up kisses Sipowicz's shoulder.
Yeah, that was weird. I know what you're talking about. But, I don't know, she's close to him, and he kind of helped her, didn't he?
Well, yeah, and that's what she says, like, you help me, why wouldn't I want to help you? So if you need me to tell you what meetings I'm going to or anything like that, we can do that. But what they gather from the situation is that the guy who killed the owner of the shop was shot himself and was leaving injured. So they put out a canvas for anybody with a gunshot wound coming in within the last hour or so. They get a hit on a guy in a hospital coming in for a gunshot wound, a guy named Donald Selness, played by famous face Tobin Bell.
Who said Tobin Frost, but that was... I was going to say Tobin Frost, but that was Denzel Washington's character in Safe House, which I just watched, too.
Of all of the characters and actors' names. But Tobin Bell is, of course, a famous face from earlier in this series. He was in a season one episode where he was playing basketball with John Kelly. But he was...
Did you say Don Kelly or
no,
John Kelly?
No, John Kelly.
It sounded like you said Don there, churchening.
Okay. Well, Tobin Bell is known for being in a season one episode as well as the Saw series as Jigsaw or John Kramer. He only plays people named...
Oh, he was Jigsaw?
Yeah, he was Jigsaw for every single one, except I haven't seen the reboot because I feel like it's a bastardization of a great story. And also, Jigsaw has been dead since, like, Saw 4, so I really don't know. Well, Saw 3, so I don't know how he could have been in the reboot.
They did a reboot already?
Yeah, they did it, like, 2 or 3 years ago. It's called Jigsaw.
That's weird. Anyways.
Tobin Bell, who has a gunshot wound in his arm, is being very, what's the word? He's just ducking and weaving on all the questions. Like, yes. Saying, like, yeah, I was just shot by some crazy guy in the park. I have no idea what's going on. Sipowicz at some point says, tell me the truth or I'll shoot you in your other shoulder. Then he also says...
I mean, they know he did it. Like, they know it's him.
Yeah, they're just trying to...
But they don't have anything to prove it other than the gunshot, but you can't really prove anything with that. So it's kind of funny, because they're, like, going at him, but they can't get an answer from him. Or they can't get him, basically.
They also bring up, like, have you ever been arrested before? And he's like, I've been in some scrapes. And Sipowicz says, well, that explains his hard case attitude.
Yeah.
And they bring him into the house and then try to look at other angles. One of the things that happen after they come back to the house, Fancy just calls up Aiello and says the new PAA is not working.
Well, yeah, the PAA sucks. Like, I think there's a scene in earlier where she's doing something wrong and he has to, like, explain it to her again, and he gets frustrated. So he calls and says, like, she's gotta go.
There's a moment where the DAA, or the district attorney,
Cohen,
he comes in, and she says, oh, that means you're gonna be helping the squad with blah blah blah. He's like, hey, thanks for reading down what I'm supposed to do. And, like, basically, because Cohen's a dick to everybody.
Yeah.
And then he's a dick to her, and then later, or right at before that or after that, Fancy tells her, like, hey, they're gonna take you back at the borough, and she straight up just says, oh, it has nothing to do with the fact you don't want me here, and then he just flat out, in perfect manager speak, you know, you just need to work on your skills.
And then yeah, he's not necessarily super nice about it. He's honest with her, that's the way I say.
That's the end of that story, is she's gonna be eventually...
Yeah, transferred out, she's shipped gone. Off.
When they're back at the house, there's another thing that I wanted to ask you about, being now a resident of New York City. Medavoy mentions that he found a new apartment that's 3 bedrooms with a laundry room with a view of the river. How expensive do you imagine that? How expensive do you imagine that place is?
Now?
Yeah.
Is it, well, see, the thing I don't remember, is it in Manhattan?
I'm pretty sure it's in Manhattan.
Oh, then that's gonna cost, now it's probably gonna cost like $4,000 a month.
Wait, $3,500 or $4,000 a month?
A month? Yeah, especially if it's 3 bedrooms. Come on, no.
With a view and a laundry room?
Yeah, yeah. First of all, most apartments, like, if it's 3 bedrooms, it's super tiny. But if it has laundry, then it's super expensive.
Just to finalize out Medavoy's nonsense, at the social function, Greg Medavoy starts talking to a woman about his apartment, and, like, he also says something like, this year I've been relatively allergy-free.
It's something super nerdy.
Because she says, oh, you're the Phantom of the Crib, basically saying, like, you're the fucking weirdo that sleeps here every night. And he says, oh, yeah, I was in a spat with my wife, basically.
My wife, yeah.
And now I've got my own place in the city. And she's like, oh, wow, really? And he's like, where do you live? And it's like, okay. I mean, I'm no expert in conversational dynamics, but I don't know if she really would like to tell you where she lives. She doesn't even know who you are, really.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, he's a weirdo. And every time he talks to a woman, it's like the anti-game. Like, he has no... He oozes absolutely negative charisma.
Okay, and can we talk about something real quick?
Yes, absolutely.
So, this chick that he talks to...
Mm-hmm.
Or this woman that he talks to, her name's Annie, right?
No, that's not even the lady that he's going to end up talking to in the next season. I think they were setting up the idea that he might talk to her next season, but then they got a different actress.
Because they talked at John's goodbye. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they use that same actress next season, because he does
talk... Okay, because that's what I was going to say, is that girl just disappeared.
she does. She talks to Medavoy just once, and then never talks to him again, and is never in that precinct again.
Yeah, she straight up is gone.
The main story, which we've already gotten into with Tobin Bell's character, Donald Selness, I'll finish up with that one, but the side story is Medavoy, Martinez, and Lesniak get a call about 2 DOAs in an alley.
Yes, they do.
And when they...
It's weird, they're doing this thing where 3 people work together instead of 2.
I guess murder is just down. in that precinct. And their working this case really proves how not interesting their characters are compared to the characters we like.
Uh-huh.
Because, like, Medavoy and Martinez and Lesniak show up to the place, and Medavoy starts, like, reading the crime scene like Sipowicz would, but it's, like, really annoying. Where he's like,
yeah.
Oh, you figure they're junkies? You figure maybe the lover's quarrel? And then he's like, well, this guy's bone dry, and he's not shot or anything, so maybe an overdose? He's like, yeah, maybe it's an overdose. And then this one, maybe she was shot because of this. And it's like, okay, calm the fuck down. And then they pull off a Band-Aid that had a gunshot wound on it. And he's like, oh, wow, so he must have been shot earlier. And then they put him in new clothes and then brought him out here. And it was like... And then Lesniak comes in with the car's information, because they ran the plates.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, hey, this belongs to Bauerline. It belongs to a Shelley and James Bauerline. If that isn't James, then maybe James is the one that did him in. And then she's like, what's with the bullet hole? Why is there a Band-Aid on it? And it's like, what? Like, if it's supposed to be funny, it's really just annoying. And, like, makes us wish that just we had Sipowicz and Simone clones.
Yeah, but I get it. I mean, I actually kind of liked that story. I thought it was interesting. Because, like, there's that scene where the mom, like, takes them straight to where the boy, like, dude is sleeping and basically rats him out.
Well, yeah, because they bring in James Bauerline, who owns the car with Shelley Bauerline. And Shelley Bauerline's the dead woman in the car who was shot. And he says, because they assume he's a suspect because he's the closest connection they have. And he
James, and he's a recurring face, I think, James Bauerline.
I wrote down his name because I could have swore I've seen his face before. His name is Casey Semezko. And the reason I've seen his face before is because he has been in Stand By Me, Back to the Future, Young Guns, and The Phantom. And I think he shows up again. I think he might be a future internal affairs guy, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he goes after somebody. Yeah, I think you're right.
He explains that his wife got really into drugs and left him for this guy Les Treat.
Mm-hmm.
And was ruining their credit and taking more and more money. And they get the sense off this guy that he was just like a husband that didn't want her to like be in trouble.
But, yeah, like she bailed on him and he still was trying to help her, but like, yeah, he was kind of a schmuck.
So he has the, like you mentioned, he has the address to Les Treat's mom's business.
Yeah.
And when they head down there, she says, oh yeah, my son sleeps upstairs because we've had attempted break-ins. And when they go up there, he's like just shoo-shooing them away, like, oh, I'm in my mom's business, I'm taking a rest because I stay here at nights. And he's like, well, where do you normally stay, Les? He's like, I don't stay anywhere. And she's like, don't you stay with that Shelley Bauerline?
Yeah, she's just ratting him out left and right.
And then they just carry his ass up and take him to the station. The dude who plays Les Treat is Leland Orser.
Uh-huh.
He's a famous face, but he's just been in a little bit of everything you've ever seen, I think. He was on Lost. He's been on, like, every good TV show as a character actor. And he's doing a great job as a druggie who's just using the interrogations to get more drugs.
Uh-huh.
And he does a great job because he's sick. He's obviously, like, dope sick.
Well, he wants his methadone.
Yeah,
so I don't know exactly what methadone is.
Methadone, I think, treats, if I remember correctly, methadone treats, like, the symptoms of being sick because of drugs.
Uh-huh.
But it's not as potent or as dangerous.
It's supposed to wean you off, right? Isn't that, like, its goal? Is it supposed to, like, help you get off of drugs?
Yeah, you're supposed to get it in smaller and smaller doses until you're just off of methadone and drugs. So this Les Treat character uses his first interrogation by giving up a little information where he says a third party killed both of them, but I'll give you the full story if you give me my drugs. They get him his drugs, and then he admits it's him, and he says, I won't write it down until I get the rest of my drugs.
Yeah, he keeps, Like, he does half, he does half. And then there's that, he has like a little monologue where he's like, I will not do any more target until I get the rest of my methadone. Something weird like that. And then once he gets it, he like admits to everything.
I will not write this down in a statement until I get the rest of my prescribed medication. The other funny Metavoy thing about this is at one point he drives this by Fancy, and he says, I'm going to give him some of his methadone, so he keeps talking. And he's like, I'm thinking about giving him, like, half a dose. And Fancy just is like, do you still need to be talking to me about this, Greg? And when Greg says no...
He's annoyed with him, and he's annoyed with the PA. Mm-hmm. He's having an annoying day.
And then James Bauerlein gets a look at that Les Treat character and has an emotional moment. Lesniak offers to buy him a cup of coffee and then takes him out. And then, for all intents and purposes, she's out of the show. Because she doesn't show up in season 4.
Yeah, her and Annie both just disappear.
So,
just gone forever.
They're just gone. And, I mean, I guess we should assume that she took James Bauerlein, and then they had, like, the best cup of coffee ever, and then moved away somewhere together. I mean, make up your own fan fiction.
To Bone Zone or something, I don't know.
So, we're gonna go to the, other case. They find out the information on the car that was most likely used, because they got an eyewitness saying what kind of car it was, and that there were two people, the driver and the guy who was shot.
Yes, and they keep saying there was a second person.
They find it belongs to a woman named Karen Thanos, so they go over to her place, and Karen Thanos is played by Lola Glaudini, who is not a super famous face, but she will show up in more episodes of NYPD Blue later as a different character.
Interesting.
Yeah, I knew I recognized her from somewhere, so when I looked it up on IMDb, she is in later episodes of this very show. Someone is going for the window when they jump in, and that was Jerry Selness, who turns out to be Donald Selness's brother. And he's played by Neil McDonough, who is a famous face, but another one where you can never really say what he's in. You just recognize that dude. He's the blue-haired, white-eyed, or the blue-eyed, white-haired dude.
He was on his own TV show for a while, I know that. You think he was also in that new, the new movie by the Workaholics guys, Game Over?
Yeah, he was in.
He was in that.
Was it Game Over Man?
Game Over Man. Yeah.
Is it Game Over Man? Oh, but yeah, he was in it. But he's only, spoiler alert, he's only in it for like the first half,
which is a lot of the movie, Kirk.
Fine, Kyle. He's trying to jump out the window, and they catch him. And when they bring him in, the wife basically lets it up that she told her boyfriend, who is Jerry, to drive Donald to go pick up some money from some guy because she didn't trust Donald with her car. So now they have a pretty good idea what happened, and they just have to keep going at the brothers until they admit that Donald is the one that shot the guy and tried to do the robbery while Jerry just drove him. Or else, when Cohen comes in, he says, why don't you just prosecute both of them and we'll let a jury decide.
Yeah, Cohen wants to go after both. Cohen doesn't care.
And of course, because this is television, he gives him a ticking clock where he says, you have till the end of the tour to give us the statements, or we're charging both of them because we have enough evidence.
Yeah.
Something interesting about this episode, I felt like there was a lot of dramatic moments between two guest characters that I don't care about. Like, it seemed like they gave a lot of time to Tobin Bell and Neil McDonough.
Uh-huh.
Who are decent actors, but it was like, I mean, I'm not here for them. The whole story plays out to where they keep going back and forth, and they get more and more dramatic to say, you need to give up on your brother because we're going to charge him anyway, and you're going to go to prison. And the other guy's like, you need to write a statement, and so does your brother, so you are the only one that goes to prison.
Yeah, they're really dickish to him. It kind of sucks, because, like, I don't know, like, the guy has doing nothing but wanting to help. He just doesn't want to, like, compromise his brother, and they could give a fuck.
It's also, what's very strange that I noticed, Sipowicz hits both of them in very different ways. And
oh, I didn't notice that.
He, when they're with Donald, who's Tobin Bell, the one that's, he has a rap sheet. They said, hey, so you did that guy, and your brother drove, and we have all the evidence. And he goes, oh, you don't think that they can throw this out based... He's like, haven't you ever heard of cases they threw out because of circumstantial evidence, but no confessions? And he said, they basically go back at him, and he says, like, oh, okay, well, you can kiss my ass. And then Simone hits him off the back of the head, and Tobin Bell goes, hit me again, which is a little... That's a little precursor to Saw 2, if anybody's interested. Anyway, when they go to the other brother, Jerry, I think it's the second time they go after him, Simone gives them all the evidence that they have.
Uh-huh.
And then he says, you need to write a statement so that you don't go to jail like your brother. And then he said, what if this is a trick? What? He's like, oh my god, we're just trying to help you. And he gets quiet, and Sipowicz... like, taps him on the back of the head and says, hey, is there anybody in there? Are you with us? And it's kind of weird because they treat the one that they know is a criminal way worse than the one they know is not a criminal.
Well, of course.
But it's just kind of, it's just strange that they just put it on display like that visually. Also, Sipowicz does have some great lines, like, we're trying to keep this guy out of prison, and he could probably beat it on a moron defense.
Beat it on a moron defense.
I just caught a glimpse of a quote, but I don't remember what it was referring to. He says, someone at one point says, bet you could have been a decent guy if somebody would have hit you 3 times a week in high school.
No, I think Sipowicz says that to Tobin Frost, or Tobin Bell. I think he says that to him when they're in the... they're arguing or talking or doing whatever they have to do.
That whole story ends with them allowing them to talk, and Tobin Bell gives this speech about how you can give me part of your life if you stay on the outside, but if we're both in prison and we got no dreams. Then they hug, and then he flips off the two-way mirror, because even Sipowicz is like, we'll be able to see right through there. I'm sure that shocks you.
It was really... that was kind of funny.
The other big story here, the thing I wanted to mention more than anything, John Irvin is leaving the precinct. So he gives everybody free haircut things. Like little coupons for free haircuts.
Yeah.
And then he goes to give one to... Simone goes to grab one, and he goes, you're comped perpetually. And even
oh, yeah.
And even the PAA was like, holy shit. Then at the parties that he's throwing at the end of the episode, his mom shows up with bundt cake. And his mom shows up and he's like, oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed. You said you weren't going to do this. Then Bobby walks in to talk to Russell. And John's mom gives a piece of cake to Bobby and's like, hi, Bobby Simone. He's like, oh, I know who you are. My son talks about you all the time. He says you're the best cop since Jack Webb.
Who the fuck's Jack Webb, dude?
Somebody on TV land is all I know. And no joke, it's a crazy moment when you realize, oh, Bobby is so attractive. He has so much swagger and is so... he's just the shit. All women want to have sex with him. And even a gay man and his mother want to have sex with him.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Because earlier, John is like, you're comped perpetually. And you're like, oh, shit. And then his mom's like, you're the best cop since Jack Webb. And it's like, oh, shit, guys. Like, calm the fuck down.
It is really, really weird.
The end of the episode is... Simone and Diane are in a cafe. Well, that's the very end. Right before that, Sipowicz and Sylvia christen their baby. And I have never been in a Greek Orthodox church, but it seems like it's a lot of walking and then lifting them up and saying the same shit over and over.
that's most churches, let's be real.
Well, I feel like in the Baptist church I grew up in, it was like, okay, we're going to do the christening. You come down to the front, you do some shit, and then you sit back down. This one was like, okay, we start at the back. We do the dance.
Yeah.
Then we go about three quarters of the way. Or, no, we go about a quarter of the way, do the same thing. Now I get to about halfway, do the same thing. Three quarters of the way, do the same thing. And, I don't know, it was very strange. But
it's like, how many times does God need you to lift me up? You know what I mean?
Well, if you only do it three times, the kid's going to hell. So, what I don't understand then is, like, Sipowicz has been, like, kind of just walking through all this shit. And then when, in the middle of the christening, he starts doing the hand things. And then he starts praying in a very... Because he doesn't do it all the time, so he doesn't know all the terms and the whatnot, but he just prays for his sons and his family and their safety. And that's the last thing for Sipowicz, is just him praying for them.
Yeah, he prayed for God to watch over his dead son. He prays for that. It's really weird, because he prays loud enough for Sylvia to hear it.
It's true.
It makes the whole thing awkward.
Then it cuts to Simone and Russell, where Russell essentially goes, you haven't really been that excited about food since the time I gave you a hand job in that one restaurant. And then she starts to go in for another one, but they're out in a public cafe.
Yeah.
So he gets back close to her and he says, how about we go on a vacation? And then the line that I wanted to highlight, he says... I want to spend some time with you, and then goes in for a kiss. And I was like, well, that's Simone's smooth-ass way of saying, we're gonna go fuck on vacation a whole bunch.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah. And then, don't they make out awkwardly at the... Is this the episode where they make out awkwardly at a taxi?
Well, I know that they get up from the cafe after paying the tab, and then as they're walking, like, arm in arm, like, they just can't wait until they get back to, like, their domicile. They just start making out on the street, and then it cuts to the black executive produced by.
Yeah, it's some weird-ass shit. It's a weird way to end the season.
Well, it's also, it's very fun to think about. Because when this show was coming out, nobody was binging shit.
Yeah.
So, like, the end of the season isn't really the same way it is now. And, like, nobody has to end it with this big flourish that makes you want to come back. It's just kind of like, this is the last episode for a little while, so here it is. And nowadays, if that was the season ender of, like, any show, people would be, like annoyed. Like, there was no big thing, there was no big reveal or...
Yeah, there's nothing going on. What's the deal?
So it's interesting, and it's also weird because they set up what you think might be something for Medavoy, and then that woman's just gone. Lesniak is just gone, and they didn't give her like a goodbye.
Yeah, the Lesniak thing is super weird because she ghosts. She's just gone.
That's the end of season 3. It's the first full season of Simone, which was nice. It was good to have him the entire time. And him and Andy aren't awkward anymore, so it's an awesome season.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's a good season. It's a solid season.
Anything else you'd like to say about this episode of the season, Kyle?
No, not really.
We got Sipowicz starting a new family. Because his kid is dead and he's no longer with his ex-wife.
Yeah.
So he gets a reboot and we'll see what goes on from there. Every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AsherBrothersPodcast.com and where you find a podcast. The schedule's every other Tuesday unless I have some type of special episode I want to sneak in the Tuesdays in between. You can always find us on Instagram and Twitter. Twitter is Asher Bros Pod. Instagram is Asher Brothers Podcast. if you want to give us notes about the episodes you like or talk about something, I'll try to include it in the episode itself or at the end. Other than that, get Hulu or Amazon and start watching NYPD Blue. It's easy. Amazon's got some good shit, but Hulu, you know, they got Castle Rock. That's pretty rad. They got Community, and they got South Park, and they got Handmaid's Tale.
What's Castle Rock?
Castle Rock, Kyle, which I'm sure you're going to be super into. Castle Rock is J.J. Abrams and Stephen King. They wrote a story based on one of the towns that Stephen King based a lot of his stories in, like Cujo, Stand By Me, Shawshank Redemption, and it's kind of like a shared Stephen King universe show.
Yeah.
First episode was pretty rad, so was the second, but I stopped since then.
You disinterested me with the word J.J. Abrams.
The name J.J. Abrams.
Oh, the name, sorry, yeah. So I'm good, thank you.
But you like Handmaid's Tale. That's up there.
Yeah. But is J.J., does he add flair into this
No.
Castle Rock?
No, it's very dark.
No, he will at some point.
And also, if you got Amazon, you can check out Jack Ryan with John Krasinski. But other than that, have a good one, guys. And watch NYPD Blue. Please.
Have a good one.
Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. Every single episode is on AstroBrothersPodcast.com, iTunes, Stitcher, where you find a podcast. You can also find episodes of Astro Brothers Podcast where we're talking about things other than NYPD Blue. If you need more NYPD Blue info in your life, you can check out Gene Kendall's book, An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue. You can check out True Blue, written by some of the show's creators, about the first couple seasons. And if you could and take some time to do so, please rate and review the show. It's how people see the show. If you want more people listening to our show, which, hey, maybe you don't want more people listening to our show, maybe you hate it, hey, leave a review. I'm sure you have nothing but positive things to say about how attentive and not sick my brother is. Thank you for listening. Thanks for being fans of the show. Thanks for listening to this show. Have a good one. Watch more NYPD Blue, and peace.